Today's episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Secured Components. Secured Components is a certified small business supporting the warfighter since 2008. Secured Components delivers innovative and cost-effective solutions for high-reliability supply chain challenges arising from diminishing manufacturing sources and material shortages across a wide range of DoD legacy systems and platforms. Secure Components' commitment to a transparent supply chain, counterfeit avoidance, and strategic sourcing translates to increased readiness, reliability, and efficiency for the warfighter. Please visit their website at securecomponents.com or call them at 484-881-3125. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. Today is episode number 228 with Basin Morris.
We have this tendency to just open up our Instagram feed and see, you know, this guy who, quote, was an overnight success and went and did it. And when you really start to dig into those stories, what I found more and more was, yeah, there are the occasional random home run, the person who, you know, discovered this amazing widget and now that widget has changed the world and they're, you know, a 24-year-old gazillionaire. Yeah, those there, but the vast majority of successful either entrepreneurs or even just successful employees take time to build a plan, to figure out what are the things they need to do to get there. They build that strong foundation, and then they go after it.
Special thanks to Dan Pentowski from BTU number 90 for making the introduction to Bazan. In this interview, we talk about taking the long game in one's career and not rushing to get rich quick. Bazan gives spot-on tactical advice on networking, resume prep, LinkedIn profiles, financial responsibility, and a variety of other topics that are broadly applicable to anyone going through a career transition. This is a resource-rich episode, so be sure to check out the show notes at beyonduniform.io, where we have links to all the books, podcasts, and more that we discuss. And it is not too late to take part in our 2018 pledge drive, where we are driving for as many iTunes reviews as we can get. If you Google Beyond the Uniform and iTunes or Apple Podcasts, you will find us there. Takes about 15 seconds, regardless of whether you're not an Apple lover or user. You can sign up and leave a review, and they would be greatly appreciated. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Bazan. Joining me today in Fort Worth, Texas, is Bazan Morris. Bazan, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Justin.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background. Bazan's a financial advisor at Raymond James, which is a public company based in Florida that provides financial services to individuals, corporations, and municipalities. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served in the Marine Corps as an artillery officer for over 6 years. His civilian career has included work at the Toll Brothers, Turner Construction, Amazon, and Chewy. And so, Bazan, maybe to start things off, could you share a little bit more about what your first job search was like out of the military?
Sure, absolutely. So when I was transitioning in 05, the advice that I had gotten from some folks who had gone through it recently was you either pick a place you want to live and go find a job, or you find a job that you really love and live wherever it sends you. So for my wife and I, the answer was simple. We took option A and said, we're going to go to Arizona. We loved the Phoenix area. That's where we wanted to be. And we figured, okay, we'll just figure out when we get there. But I did have the opportunity to do a little bit of job searching beforehand. So when I had made the decision that I was going to transition out, it was about a year out from my actual end of service date. So I had time to start asking a lot of questions and getting my resume together and editing it and sending it out and getting it kicked back. So that initial job search really took almost a full year. When we moved out to Arizona, we did not have jobs, and I just knew that I would find something. So for me, it was kind of a hope on a prayer. It was first kind of understanding what's even out there. What can I do? So the first piece of it was putting together that resume and getting it out in front of folks who were already in the civilian world and giving them the opportunity to kind of red ink all over it and bleed all over the resume and tell me what are the things that don't make sense or how to reword things. And that really helped to narrow down the search. They also recommended some books to me, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later, but like some things to help narrow down where you want to be. The guidance that I had gotten and from some of the recruiters that will tend to go after some of the folks that are transitioning, like you hear one of three things. One is, you know, it's sales. So you can go into total commissioned work and sales positions are out there, pharmaceutical sales, medical device sales, et cetera. You can go into operations, which is this big field of leading people, and maybe it's leading people in a manufacturing sense or leading a service team or warehousing and logistics, whatever that may look like. And then the third option was technical skill, was an actual repair of a unit or knowledge of electrical components. My background didn't lend to the technical part, so I knew that technical jobs were not ones that I was going to go after. And at the time, I looked at it, and I kind of had the natural reversion to sales, and went, "Oh my God, I don't want to sell things. I don't want to do that with my life." But here I am, 15 years later, and doing that. That's a whole nother story. But yeah, I knew that that was not what I wanted to do as my first job getting out. So it was operations type roles. So I started to look at things like that. Look at jobs that had that operations manager or leading people, leading teams. Those were the ones that I started to naturally just gravitate towards. And it was really like what my background kind of landed towards. Like that was where I should end up.
I love that. And you know, two of the things in particular I really like about your story is, one, you started thinking about this a year before you were going to exit the military, which I think is a good amount of time compared to many people who maybe start thinking about this a couple months beforehand. And then the second thing that I love is how you put a stake in the ground around location. And I think the tendency of a lot of the people in the military that I speak with is an aversion to ruling things out. And they'll say things like, "I'm a jack of all trades, I'm willing to go anywhere right. and do anything." And I think that they do that because they think it will maximize their options, it'll keep all the doors open, and it'll result in the best outcome. But more often what I've heard from guests on the show is that that makes it difficult. It makes it difficult to really focus and narrow in. And it also makes it really difficult to have other people help you. You know, when you say, "Hey, I'm going, I really want to go to Phoenix, Arizona. I'm looking for an operational role at a tech company," or whatever it is, that makes it easy for people to just fly through their mental Rolodex because they want to help you. But when you say, "I'll do anything," it just doesn't, it's not spoon feeding right. people the way that it will help them.
Yeah. When I initially started, so that year out, it was, I had that same answer. "Well, I'll do anything," right? It doesn't matter. And I had a really good mentor who talked to me a lot about that, who had finished an MBA at Harvard and then gone on to GE, and was like, I thought that was kind of what I wanted to do. So he even sat me down and we talked about MBA programs and is that the right decision. So I think sometimes I know myself, it was, as I was getting ready for the transition, it was like, "Well, you should go to school." Well, do you really need to? Is that really the right thing? Like, what do you want to do with that? Why are you going to go spend, you know, almost $100,000 on an MBA at a top level school to then not use it? So I think you're absolutely right. Like, when we put those blanket statements out and say, you know, "I'm a people person," well, that's a really big blanket. You know, you start to narrow things down. It makes it easier for the folks that are trying to help you, and it makes it easy for you. I knew I was not going to move to Minot, North Dakota. So didn't matter how great the job was, I was not going north. I knew that. That's not where I wanted to be. So it made it easier for me as a candidate, too, to know which roles I should even spend the time to go after.
That's awesome. And just for context for the rest of the interview, could you share with listeners a little bit more about your current work at Raymond James?
Sure. So right now, essentially what I do is long-term strategic planning and financial planning, and I'll do for particularly families, and it ranges from folks that are retirees or getting ready to retire to young couples that are just starting in their journey. all the way to business owners, so small to medium-sized business owners that are, again, looking maybe for an exit strategy. They've built up their company over time or just getting started, and I will, you know, help them partner with commercial lenders or other folks to help get their vision up off the ground and then help them with their plans as they continue to operate the company. To put a you know, my own little tagline on it, I'd like to tell people I'm sort of a sleep aid. I work with my clients. I help align their money with their goals so that they can sleep at night.
I love it.
That's the tagline I'll use.
That's great. And one of the things I really wanted to delve into is, you know, special thanks to Dan Pontowski from episode 90 for making this introduction. And when Dan introduced us, he talked about a little bit about you had a recent career change of switching from a really impressive career in operations to go into finance, which doesn't seem like had a lot of overlap in your background. Could you share a little bit more about what motivated this pretty drastic change and how you went about that?
So it was a planned change in the sense that when I first was looking to get out, so this was part of that, you know, the things that I did a year out, which really helped me, and I would absolutely encourage your listeners to continue to do as well, is I started asking everybody I knew about their job. Even if I knew it was something that I didn't want to get into, maybe the conversation with them would spark, well, hey, you should go talk to this person, or let me get your name in front of. I actually ended up talking to a lobbyist in Arizona who was trying to get me on with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Like, I would not have had that opportunity if I just didn't go into it with that blank slate of let me talk to everybody and really understand what was out there, because, you know, for the previous years before that, you know, 4 years in college and then 6 years in service, you know, that previous decade, I thought I was going to be a career Marine officer. It was just later in life that I, you know, some things happened. I decided, okay, it was time to move on. So I really had no clue what to even look for. So have that open mind to just go ask folks and understand what they do. And one of the people I talked to was a financial advisor that I used at the time. And he sat me down and we talked about the industry and what it looked like. And the advice that he gave me, which was huge and, you know, life-changing, was go live your life. It's going to be really hard to get into this industry. I'm not saying that you can't do it, but it's really hard to make a transition into this industry when you literally have been blowing stuff up for the last 6 years. Like, your job has been shooting really big guns. It's hard to walk into a business owner or a family and say, trust me with your life savings, trust me with your life work, I'll invest it for you because I know how to pull a lanyard and send a round downrange. So he had told me, like, go live life, go get a job, lose a job, you know, have some kids, buy a house, buy cars, like do all of these things that other people can relate to. So this transition has been, you know, 13 years at this point in the making, is that it was always in the back of my head. And when I decided to get into more of an operations-focused role, I first started with Toll Brothers and was an assistant project manager there, helping to build houses, eventually transitioned into commercial construction. And in 2010, I had the opportunity to get on with Amazon and really dive into the world of e-commerce. And that was so much like being a young lieutenant again. I was given, you know, 50 to 100 people, very little resources, not really told what to do, but told that here's your mission, right? Your job is to get X amount of packages out today and get the right packages and get them on a truck. Go. And so it was a reversion in the sense that I was kind of going back to being a young Marine officer again, but it was also fascinating because now I was really diving in to this new industry and kind of understanding it. And that helped to move me up within that organization, and then made the move over to Chewy.com and eventually running their fulfillment center here in Grand Prairie, Texas. And it was a great experience, but the desire to be a financial advisor had never left. And now I sat in the warehouse, you know, on a Thanksgiving day, literally my eighth Thanksgiving working, and, you know, had that come to Jesus moment that some people have. And it's just like, what am I doing? Like, I've always wanted to do this. The stars have aligned. I've done all the things that I said I was going to do and all the things that I had to do to be prepared to make this transition. And that's really when it, like, the spark was there. And it kind of goes back to just a sense of service. You know, I think a lot of people, when they're in the service, you know, myself included in that, you know, we feel that we're there and we're providing value. You know, whatever that job may be terrible at the time, but you always have that sense of, well, I'm doing something to provide for my unit, for my peers, for my company, for my, for my case, for the Marine Corps, for the United States. Like, there was always that sense of service that I was doing something. And getting into financial services has just been kind of a natural extension to that. I get to serve my clients. I get to do the things that are right for them in order for them to meet their goals. You know, if you ever read Zig Ziglar, he has that famous tagline that I love hearing. You know, if I help enough people get what they want, I'll have everything that I want. So that's really what was the transition. So it seemed very abrupt. I mean, if you look at, you know, my LinkedIn profile, it's like, whoa, what happened? You know, it really was a manifestation of the last 13 years. And it wasn't necessarily a straight line, but I finally got where I should be.
That's awesome. And I respect the advice that man gave you in saying, you know, be willing to take a couple jobs, lose a couple jobs, get that experience. I when I hear that, I find the whole process less daunting of not trying to nail things on the first time, but like getting some experience, sure, figuring out what you like, and then moving on. One question I have is, there's almost like this conflict between a lot of popular advice that I hear that I, you know, just to own my own bias, I think is well-intended, but maybe misguided. And that advice is in the vein of seize the day, go after what you want right now, and pursue that wholeheartedly, which I think there is a lot of truth to that. And at the same time, where the conflict comes in for me is I respect your decision of saying, this is what I want to do, but this is the experience I need to gain to really tee me up for success. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on how to balance, on the one hand, recklessly, in a good way, recklessly pursuing one's dream, and on the other hand, playing the long game and being sure, prudent about the steps that one takes towards that dream.
It's funny. You're absolutely right. Like, I think sometimes we look at, and it's become much more prevalent in, you know, the last 15 years with the advent of YouTube and the internet. We can probably get on a very long philosophical discussion about, you know, our instant gratification society, but we have this tendency to just open up our Instagram feed and see, you know, this guy who, quote, was an overnight success and went and did it. And when you really start to dig into those stories, what I found more and more was, yeah, there are the occasional random home run, the person who, you know, discovered this amazing widget, and now that widget has changed the world, and they're, you know, a 24-year-old gazillionaire. Yeah, those there, but the vast majority of successful either entrepreneurs or even just successful employees take time to build a plan, to figure out what are the things they need to do to get there. They build that strong foundation, and then they go after it. My own personal story, I did what everybody did in 2006 and 2007. I bought a house that I couldn't afford. I bought a car that I could barely make the payments on. I was totally stretched to my limits. And then I went and lost my job and woke up one day completely broke, you know, credit card debt, $60,000 in credit card debt, and wondering how I was going to pay for groceries that month. Like, what happened, right? Like, what was I doing? And I had to take that really hard self-reflection and go, you didn't follow your own plan. You had a plan. You had all these things that you wanted to do, and you didn't do them. You hit the shortcut and went and did it. And the more that I started to kind of dive into, you know, the Tim Ferrisses of the world or Gary Vaynerchuk, who's really big on LinkedIn and YouTube. Like, these guys did it through hard work. You had to go out and really get in the trenches and go do it. And that episode in my life helped to kind of change my attitude towards it. And that, yeah, I can be that quote overnight success. You know, and people are only going to see the success. They're not going to see the determination. They're not going to see the hard work. They're not going to see the sleepless nights. But I have to do those if I'm going to go get there. So, I think, like you said, it's a balancing act. You have to understand how much you're going to put into something in order to get something out. But at the end of the day, when you really dig into those successful people and those successful stories, they worked really hard. They dug in and said, hey, it may not be happening for me right now, but if I know I do this, this, and this, the big payoff will come. And I think it's really challenging for veterans because we look at our transition and you almost get presented with this model that, like, there's 1,000 employers who are standing outside the transition office, and when you walk out with your DD-214, they're all going to fight over you to hand you their job offer and bring you on board. And that's not it. You've got to lay that foundation. You may have to take a job that's a step or two steps below where you thought you would if you can see the opportunity there, and then go after it. Like, that's that go after it moment. You've got to have that plan to be able to do it. I hope that made sense. I know that was kind of long-winded.
No, I love it. I mean, and just for listeners, I want to own, I'm biased towards completely agreeing with you on this. And I will add in the show notes, I'll add a link to Gary Vaynerchuk's podcast. I fall in and out of love on it. It's a lot to take, but
right.
What I admire about his message is he does really evangelize doing the hard work and not having an entitled sense of instant success. And
yeah,
what you said definitely is consistent with the 230 interviews I've done before this, where a lot of people in the military did expect that they would get out and have a job presented to them, or, you know, they
right,
listen to the mantra. I don't think this is their own fault, but they listen to this mantra that I heard when I was in the military, which is the nation owes you a great debt. And, you know, there's going to be a ticker tape parade for you when you get out. And I think that my experience is that most people do greatly respect and appreciate the sacrifice of people in the military. And, you know, the appreciation ends when they maybe buy you a beer. It's not going to go further than that. And so I think by approaching that transition and not expecting anything, even if you're wrong, I'd rather have you be overprepared and not expecting anything rather than relying on it. So I love that part of your story of not trying to take shortcuts and not try, you know, still working smartly, but not being so myopic that you make decisions that hurt you in the long run.
Right. Right.
Do you have any thoughts? I know there's, I think that you have a lot of knowledge here I'd like to tap into, but any advice for listeners as they think about setting up their LinkedIn profile, writing their resume, which you talked about earlier, even approaching networking and making transitions within their career? I know that's kind of a wide gamut, but I'd love to give you space to speak to whatever is most relevant for you.
Yeah, I'll talk about it in that order. So the first one is the LinkedIn. Again, talk to some people. So my official last day in the Marine Corps was August 15th, 2005. And in August 2004, I was talked to about LinkedIn. What is LinkedIn? Why do you set up this profile? And I'm so glad I did it. Again, I had that entire year to screw it up, to take the time to actually put things out there and figure out, oh, nobody's looking at it, or I'm not connected to anyone. But I think the biggest thing is it's your very first opportunity to start showing how you bring value to an organization outside of the military. So a lot of times what you'll do, and I think if you start to go through LinkedIn, you'll see that there's a handful of folks who literally just took their fitness reports and copied and pasted it onto LinkedIn. And it's, you know, yes, it's wonderful that you had, you know, 200, you had a 97% passing PFT rate with your platoon. What does that mean to an employer? And that kind of goes right back into the resume writing as well. A great piece of advice that I had gotten, and I work with some guys who are transitioning, and if I, you know, they hit me up on LinkedIn, and for any of your listeners out there, like if you find my profile on LinkedIn and you just want to ask them questions, I'm totally open to that. I love doing it. Just because I've been there, like, and I understand those things as a hiring manager as well. When I was with some of those other companies, what are the things that we look for? But the question that someone had given to me, and I've always taken this piece of advice, is on every single bullet on your resume, you need to ask yourself one question, and the question is, so what? And what do you, what that person meant, and it took a little while to do this, and it was dozens of versions of my resume to get there, was, you know, I managed 300 people and $20 million of government assets. So what? What are you trying to tell an employer? How are you going to bring value from that experience and put it into language that it means something to them? So instead of saying, hey, I managed $6 million of artillery assets in a 185-man artillery unit, I managed 185 personnel and appropriate assets and was able to reduce deployment readiness time by 18%. That tells an employer you're thinking beyond just these are the things that I'm in charge of. This is how I brought value to it. And it allows that person who's reading it to go, wow, tell me about that. How did you reduce that 18%? What was the story? And you're generating from there. So I think those two kind of blend together, is that as you put things out on LinkedIn, see who's looking at it. LinkedIn has some really incredible tools where you can see the profile. And I would absolutely encourage people, if you can afford to do it, pay for the LinkedIn premium. I think it's $29.99 a month, something like that. But it gives you access to who's looking at it. So as I started to get into my job search, I just started saying, well, who's looking at my resume? Is it the right people? If I wanted to get into the tech industry and the only people that are looking at it are recruiters for forklift drivers, there's something wrong with my profile. I haven't done something to get those right people. And it also, LinkedIn is this beautiful community that allows people an open door. You can reach out to anyone in the world in any industry. Now, you're not always going to get a response. There are many people, again, as you start to get on LinkedIn, you'll see someone who has not updated their LinkedIn profile in years. So, you know, don't be brokenhearted if that person doesn't write back to you. But if you send out 50 introduction messages and say, I'd like to really understand about what you do, your industry sounds really interesting, could we talk? If you're local, could we maybe meet up for a cup of coffee and just kind of, can I pick your brain? Here's what I think I'm going to be good at. If you send out 50 and you get 3 responses, why not? That's 3 more people that you get to understand about what they do and give you feedback on things, or reach out to recruiters and say, hey, this is my, you know, what are you looking at in my profile that makes me so attractive? Get that conversation started. It really does provide that opportunity, but you've got to go out and get it. And I think unless you know that before you transition, unless you're starting to do those things before you're sitting in the TAP class, before you're sitting in that last week, before you're, you know, given your DD-214 and sent out the door, you should be doing those things, because it's just going to help prepare you to get there. As far as networking goes,
Let me just jump in real quick before the networking. So I love what you're saying. I really appreciate the point on the resume bullets, and I love how you unpacked your experience. You know, the phrase I keep on using with this is spoon feeding, but what you're showing me in that is that you understand the civilian business context to which you're able to address your skill set, rather than expecting them to do the heavy lifting of translating what you've said. It goes a long way. And I always think that, you know, numbers are the universal language. And so when you're able to speak to a number of people you managed, a percent increase in efficiency or a cost reduction with a specific number, anything like that. I, you know, honestly, at this point, I've been out of the military so long. If I was talking to someone in the Air Force, I wouldn't really understand the details of their job. But if they said, hey, I was in a position where I increased our turnaround time on whatever by 15%, I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty impressive. Or I was the number one of 15 junior officers. I'm like, okay, this guy's got to be pretty good, even if I don't even know what a junior officer is. So I loved that. And then I also wanted to put a plug in for listeners. In the show notes, I'll link to this. But I absolutely agree with Bazan on the LinkedIn premium membership. I've had that for years. And the great thing is LinkedIn has something that's called LinkedIn for Good, where they will give any military veteran or anyone in active duty a free year of that premium membership. So I'll put a link in there, but that's a great thing to pull the trigger on when you're ready. So I interrupted you, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on networking as well.
No, yeah, that, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so the networking piece, like I think for folks that are still on active duty, it becomes difficult, right? Especially, you know, if you're overseas somewhere, like how do I network? And that's where LinkedIn becomes that network for you. Use that opportunity to ask people about their careers and what they like, because, and I think we've all experienced this, you know, especially if you've got some folks that have already transitioned. You know, there's a handful that, hey, my buddy is really killing it selling these widgets up in, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm going to move to Omaha, and he guaranteed me I'm going to make $100,000 my first year, and I'm going to triple that my next year. And then that person gets out there, and they realize, well, the reason that he's killing it is that it's his family's business, and he really believes in these widgets, and he's been, you know, a widget expert his entire life, and this whole community absolutely loves him. And you know, when he came out and, you know, hey, now I'm a, you know, I'm an Air Force veteran and I'm back selling widgets. I mean, the money just rolled in for him. Like, forgot to tell you that part. Like, you know, so get those details.
Would have been
it.
Good to know that little detail. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've all had that buddy and that friend that did that and moved somewhere. And, you know, then they turn around 2 years later and go, I can barely make it. I'm struggling. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Or, and it's just, you know, it's sad. It's like, we've got to get into the details. Get into the details. Dig, dig, dig. Don't accept just, well, I woke up one day and I was brilliant and that's how this company came to be. No, like, tell me what you did to get there. Help me understand what your day is really like. If you can do informational interviews, and again, very difficult if you're still on active duty, but if you can do that, and go somewhere and spend a day with the person that you think the career field is that you're going to get into, absolutely go do that. It's not always easy, especially, you know, the more senior you are and the more higher level position you're trying to get to, the person may not be that open to it. But if you can, absolutely go spend a day. Like, even, you know, your basic E2 who got busted and, like, was not the you know, the terminal lance corporal, right? Like, that's the term out of the Marine Corps, the terminal lance corporal that never made it past lance. Like, what is he going to do? Well, you know, if he wants to go be a welder, go spend a day with a welder. Go see really what they do in and out, because, again, the stories happen more often than we would like to admit, where somebody goes into a career field or does something because their buddy was doing it and it sounded really good, and then they realize they hate it. And you're spending now more time and more of your life trying to figure that piece out. So if you can do that thing and then do those informational or day interviews, that's a great way to do it. And then any opportunity you get to attend a networking event, you've got to get more comfortable with that. And it's not necessarily the elevator speech. Yes, there's the elevator speech. You've got to have a little bit of knowledge of who you are and what you want to get into. But be ready to ask a lot of questions. Help me understand what you do. Help me, like, why are you in this industry? How did you get there? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? What are the things you could wish you could change? Like, have a handful of really good questions to dig into people, because then as soon as you get them talking, and most people are like this, right? Like, I'm obviously like this. You know, you ask me questions. I love talking about myself. People love talking about themselves. take advantage of that. But you've got to be able to ask those good open-ended questions to help get that information out of people. I guess the biggest thing is start early and be an open book and ask questions. And when you've asked questions, ask more and keep asking. Like, people will give you information beyond what you could imagine if you just ask the right questions.
I love it. What about, this is fantastic advice, and I think applicable to every listener. And I also wanted to expand on this and ask about any resources that have helped you. And that could be a book, podcast, conference, anything that's helped you in your civilian career that listeners should check out.
Yeah, there's a couple. I think the first one, a book that I read about a year ago, which was fantastic, and I think anyone should do it if you're getting close. If you're within that year before transition, you should absolutely, and even if you already transitioned, and even if you love your job, read Start With Why by Simon Sinek. That book is just a great breakdown of understanding. If you understand your why, if you have a good grasp on why you're doing whatever the job is, whatever the company is, whatever the new product is that you're creating, if your why is strong, like, you are insurmountable. So having that kind of understanding and changing your mind around it is huge. So that's the first one. Another book that I would definitely recommend is called Mastery by George Leonard. I read this book probably 4 or 5 years after I had gotten out, and it's a book about understanding that waking up and being a success and being a prodigy is very rare. It's the people who put in the work that will be so much more successful. So as a master of whatever that is, you've got to have this mentality that, like, I'm always going to learn something. How am I in a constant learning, a constant growth? One of the things that kind of comes out of that book, which I like the mentality is, and I studied jiu-jitsu. I started doing jiu-jitsu. I got back on the mat about 4 months ago, and I'm a white belt. You know, I'm the whitest of white belts. Like, you know, there's days where I wonder to myself, like, what am I doing? Like, someone's going to kill me out here. But when I have that mentality, is like, okay, if I just learn, if I continue to learn a little something every day, it will make me better. And, you know, again, like a quick sidebar, like, why are black belts considered the highest masters? Well, the idea was you wear the same belt. You never change your belt. And it starts white, but the more that you work and the more that you sweat and the more knowledge and the more lessons you get, eventually that belt gets so dirty it turns black. Like, that's where the black belt for martial arts comes from. It's that these are true masters who have dedicated themselves to this and worked and struggled and gotten there. The other piece in that book, which I really love, is they talk about plateaus. I mean, how many of us have been in a workout regimen or a diet regimen or done something, and we just plateau, and we don't feel like we're getting better? But the concept is that no matter how long or short the plateau is, if you keep working, eventually you will have that breakthrough. And all of a sudden it'll ramp up, and like the light bulb will turn on, and you'll jump forward in whatever the thing is that you're working on. But guess what? Eventually you're going to hit another plateau, and you're going to have to go through it again. But if you have that mentality that it's about getting through the plateaus and working through those issues and pushing through the obstacles and figuring that piece out, and you just accept that and understand, like, this is the struggle, this is what it's going to eventually make me stronger, like, you have that opportunity. And you hear it over and over again, right? Whether it's professional athletes or these motivational speakers, I mean, just go on YouTube and, like, you know, download some TED Talks, and you'll hear some incredible people about what they've had to push through. But on the surface, we look at that and go, oh, well, they woke up and they were super successful. Now, 99 times out of 100, it's because they truly dedicated themselves into mastering some skill. two other ones I'll talk about really quick, which are just great reads and kind of a, I don't want to say new age thinking, but helped me to kind of frame who I was and maybe, you know, develop some different habits was The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. So just a great book, you know, talks a lot about how do we reduce some of the unnecessary things in our lives. And then one that was truly instrumental in my life, and I say this with absolute respect, that this book literally saved my marriage, was Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. And I throw that one out there partially because of my industry. So, you know, quick plug for the financial services industry. But more importantly, I think that really having a good control over your finances before your transition will make your transition so much easier. And if I could go into every base, you know, in the country and just talk with vets about setting themselves up for that transition, have the opportunity to go into some of those transition classes and talk to guys and girls and talk to them a year out, because that's really when you have to start thinking about it. I'll kind of go into that real quick, Justin, but like, you know, if I were to say, what are the two things that you need to do ahead of time is network like crazy, go ask questions, go understand what it is, go ask about jobs and understand what you want to do. And the other piece is save money. Be ready to save as much. Just get a huge pile of cash in your checking account and just stick it in there. So when you transition, you're not struggling right away. And if the right opportunity isn't there, you're not taking something because you absolutely have to. You've still got the leeway and the flexibility to find the right fit for you. And too often, that young sailor, that young Marine, that young airman, that young soldier, they transition out, and it's like, well, I got to go find something because I've got to put a down payment on a house, or I've got to put a deposit on an apartment, and I got to get my electric turned on, and oh yeah, by the way, it's $250 to get an electric meter. Like, I wasn't planning on that. You have this big pile of cash; it'll make some of those transition moments happen so much easier for you. I think that's, you know, if the two things that I could tell all your listeners before you make that switch as early as you can, and if you're under a year, just be more aggressive around it. Try and pile up more cash as much as you can. The beer money you save now will pay off dividends down the road if you're not having to you know, kill yourself financially when you're making that transition.
This is great. I mean, I love so many of the things you said. I do want to put in a quick plug. First of all, for listeners, in the show notes for this episode, I'll have a link to every single one of the books that we just talked about. But also, I love Simon Sinek's, both his TED Talk and the book Start With Why. And if listeners are interested in that, in episode 223, I interviewed Simon's right-hand man, Peter Docker, about the Start With Why company and about that work. So that's a good primer as well. Well, this has been great, and I know that we're over on time, but I just want to always leave room at the very end to just kind of say, as we wrap up, is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to make sure listeners know before we wrap up?
I think probably one thing I just definitely want to make sure I throw out is as a vet, as I look back, you know, now 13 years later after wearing a uniform, I tell anybody that's out there that's listening right now, there is a huge wealth of resources of people who have gone through this and who are willing to help. You've got to take a little slice of humble pie and go ask for the help, and they will do it. Don't be afraid to reach out to, you know, you look at some folks who are, you know, two-star generals, and they've, you know, you find their profile on LinkedIn. If you can get a chance to talk with them, talk with them. If it's, you know, this old master gunnery sergeant that you used to work for, and now he's a plant manager at some place, like if that was person is willing to help, they're willing to go through it, because we've all done it. And sadly, I do a lot on LinkedIn and Facebook, and like you see more and more, even after 13 years, I still get hit up on LinkedIn about people who are going, I didn't know this, I wish I had it. You've got to go out and find those resources. You know, one thing I always talk about is that there are vets out there who have gone through it and they're willing to help. You just got to be able to reach out. You've got to look for those folks, look for the opportunities, look for the organizations. Again, here in Fort Worth, there's a handful, but every state, every city has them, and plug into it and, you know, find out from them. Now, you have to be careful though, too. Like, you don't want to get into that wine session, right? Like, if you just, you know, you got to understand the company that you're keeping. So if, you know, it's like asking, you know, an overweight person how to go on a diet. Like, that's not the best person to go ask. So if all that you're doing is hanging out with your unemployed former high school friends, it's not going to move you forward. So, you know, be cognizant of the company that you keep. If you're looking for those opportunities, you got to make sure that you're reaching out and getting it. I think probably the only other thing is just to make sure, again, I don't know if you got this piece earlier, Justin, but just, you know, take that slice of humble pie. Maybe it's a position a little lower than what you were expecting, but if you've really done some soul searching and the opportunity is right, it's going to work out. So have some faith in the skills and the thing that you're bringing to the table.
Surface. Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our director of outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.